Hello, Anna.
Hi.
You're in Brussels for an event that's called Freedom, Not Fear. Could you tell us what that's about?
Freedom, Not Fear is basically like a meeting or a conference where activists from all over Europe are meeting, and it's like basically activists who deal with digital rights issues like surveillance and net neutralities and stuff like this. And for us, it's a good opportunity to meet here in Brussels quite centrally to get to know each other and to exchange like our experiences and also to make plans how to go on with the digital rights issues in the next months. And on Monday we go to the parliament together in small groups to speak with parliamentarians and get a sense of what's going on there.
Okay, so you have quite a program going on there. Can we go back in time a bit? I understand this started in 2006.
Yeah, the Freedom Not Fear movement as itself like started as a movement against the expenditure of surveillance, and like surveillance was expanding, data retention especially was like on the table and planned, and then people started to form like a movement, like a really loose movement, so it's not like we have members, but it's more like there are different NGOs who define themselves as members of this movement, try to form and like to organize protests against the new data retention laws. And to do this in all over Europe, because like the regulation at that time affected whole Europe.
Yes, I read something about a mandatory data retention directive that was requiring ISPs and telcos. What are ISPs?
ISPs are internet service providers, like okay. Basically the people who provide internet for you.
Of course, and telcos, that's about telephone then.
Yeah, that's a telecom. Like, basically, it can be the same. Like, that's the people who provide you with telecommunications measures and, like, the other people providing you with internet, so it can overlap.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just to make sure that everybody understands the English.
Yeah, something like the telecom, for example, would be, like, even an ISP and the telco provider. So.
Okay, so and what does this European law ask them to do?
It asks them to store, like, the metadata of communication. That means when you made a call, for example, or whom you called, like which other number you called, or when you accessed the internet with which IP address, or like nowadays where we have smartphones, it also requires people to store like the geolocation data where their smartphone is.
Okay,
but, like it was the European law which was ruled invalid in 2014.
Okay, so it never really came into practice.
No, it came into practice for a long time, but like it was like a European directive. And the thing with the European directive is that it is not a law itself, but it has to be put into law by the member states. So they give kind of a framework, as you can call it maybe, and then the member states have to make their own laws out of it, like according to the definition there. And the member states did differently, but like most of the member states made those laws. And then in 2014, the European Court of Justice ruled the European directive invalid, and it said it's against fundamental rights, so it can't stay. But it didn't rule like all the single laws invalid, because it doesn't have the right to do that. So nowadays we have kind of a new situation where some of the member states said they don't want to have data retention anymore. Other member states didn't change anything, and like member states like the state where I'm coming from, Germany, just introduced new data retention laws, even if they didn't have it before, because like in Germany, the data retention in Germany was ruled invalid by the Court of Justice of Germany and didn't exist for like 3 years, and now after the ruling of the European Court of Justice, they decided to reintroduce it for whatever reason.
Yes, in a different form. So, and yeah. How come the European Court started working on this issue? Were there NGOs who introduced the item there, or did they do it spontaneously?
Yeah, there were complaints against the thing that people said it can't be, like, compatible with fundamental rights, and when they investigated that, and it was a long process, I think, like...
But whom did the complaints come from?
I don't know the exact name there.
Okay. So it's not individuals, but organizations that complained?
Yeah.
I see. So if I understand correctly, so first there were individual protests in different countries and then it all came together. I even saw that it was on an international scale. I mean, even beyond Europe first.
I think it's like something that affects everyone. We know that like data retention is done by secret services, especially in all kinds of countries. And data retention as itself is also in place in many kinds of countries on the government level. So it's like a thing that really affects us all, and that is like a mass blanket surveillance of all our communications. So I think...
Mm-hmm. It doesn't stop at any border, of course.
Yeah, it doesn't stop at the border, and it affects everyone like on the same level. And it affects you if you... Like, even if in your country you don't have data retention and you call someone in a country where data retention is in place, like, your data is stored and that shouldn't be done.
I have the impression that now it's basically a European movement?
Yeah, at the moment, like, especially, like, our movement is, like, a European movement. For sure there are digital rights movements in other continents who deal with, like, similar issues, but, like, especially the meeting we are having here is kind of European-centric.
So there are other initiatives elsewhere in the world, and are they all, I mean, are they all on the same date, or are they in contact with each other?
No, there are, like, we just know about the same initiative that's meeting kind of in Macedonia at the same place, but it's in Europe, but they are all independent, so we don't say we want to be, like, a really fixed movement and have those, like, fixed structures. We want to be kind of flexible and to just share that goal and have a network of organizations we can talk to if we want to make campaigns, and that's the reason why we meet here, especially in Brussels, because it's central and because all the EU institutions are here, and that's really convenient if you'd want to talk to parliamentarians and other politicians.
Yes, and if you want to do a protest march or something. If I understand correctly, at 2 o'clock, so in 15 minutes, there is some kind of protest scheduled?
Yeah, there is this big TTIP and anti-austerity protest in Brussels, which we didn't plan, but we will join that. So that's, I think, a good opportunity. We actually, when we planned the date for the event last year, we didn't know that yet because it wasn't fixed. But we thought it is a good opportunity to really have like a data protection block at the TTIP demo.
And what has TTIP to do with your subject? Is there something in TTIP that touches on security or data retention?
As maybe most people know, TTIP affects like a really broad variety of issues. And when it comes to data protection and also when it comes to net neutrality, for example, it's like that TTIP forbids that there should be anything hindering like the free trade. So it says like if there is any law in your country that hinders us from like transferring data here and forth as we like, it's not valid, so it can't be applied. So if we have good data protection laws, for example, and like the US doesn't have good data protection laws and there should be a data transfer, then the US can say, yeah,
yes,
you shouldn't apply those laws because you are not allowed to because there is this treaty and you shouldn't do that.
There are some more terms I would like you to explain that I think not everybody knows what they are. What is the Brussels bubble?
The Brussels bubble? Okay, that's...
It's not a cocktail, kind of, I think?
No, the Brussels bubble is, I think, kind of ironic word for like this Brussels world, because like Brussels, I think, is very special because you have all these EU institutions here and the people here, it's not feeling like Belgian or like a national thing, but more on the EU level, and people are dealing like with this on totally different levels because we have the parliament here and the commission here, and it's all like a little microcosmos. You see this when you maybe go to the parliament, it's all really like big buildings and you feel like in a town in itself, and that's basically called the Brussels bubbles. And
I see.
It's somehow, I think for people who don't know the processes, it's kind of seems intransparent, but it's actually not so difficult to understand it, and this is also a point why we are making this meeting, because we want to introduce new people from the member states to this Brussels bubble and show them how things are going on there and how they can affect politics on a European level, because usually you know quite well about the political processes in your own land and if you're an activist, but many people don't know about the EU level, and that we want to take the fear from the people and show them how they could approach you.
So what else did I find? I found an abbreviation. It's PNR. What's PNR?
PNR means passenger name records. That's when you are taking an airplane to some other country, or even if like it's a national flight, then data about you is collected. That means like for sure your name and where you're going to and where you're coming from and all the stuff which is in your passport maybe. But PNR is a lot more than that, because like PNR can also contain what food you had on the flight. That means like, do you eat meat, do you eat halal, do you eat like kosher food? And it also can contain if you stopped somewhere overnight, which will tell you when to, and like a lot of information about yourself that is stored.
How much you had to drink?
Maybe even that, I don't know. I think I know that it's like the food you have, but like the drinks, I think they don't note it. Yeah, so it says a lot about you, maybe if you eat kosher food, what religion you have, for example. So you can derive a lot of that information, and this is stored, and there are a lot of countries who are interested in this information. So there's a lot of pressure, for example, from Mexico and from Saudi Arabia and from the US, that like Europe should give out, or European airlines should give out those PNR data to their government, so they can, the official reason is always fight terrorism, but you can do a lot of other stuff with this data. So we know, for example, that in Mexico, they search like human rights activists with that to like really oppress them. So that's a bad thing to do. And there's a lot of danger in this data, and we want to have it protected and not even collected.
So they would think that everybody who's eating vegetarian is a potential terrorist because that might be some kind of leftist activist then?
The thing is, we don't know what they derive. That's like part of the problem. We just know that they are really interested in the data and that they are maybe not doing the thing with the data we want them to do.
And if just for fun I order kosher food, I'm not allowed into Saudi Arabia anymore. That
might happen. We don't know. Yeah, that's the problem.
Okay, another meeting tomorrow, I see. I mean, a kind of protest meeting, a demonstration is about net neutrality. What is net neutrality and where are you going to do what as a demonstration?
The demonstration is going to be in front of big telecommunications providers. And net neutrality is the issue that if you look at the internet as the thing, like all data packets are kind of equal. That means like if there is a data packet, this funny bit of like ones and zeros, you don't see if it's like a data packet that voice communication or if it's an image that is transferred or if it's a video stream or whatever or where it comes from. But if net neutrality is harmed, then people try to distinguish between them to like prioritize, for example, a video stream you paid for. And that is like a problem because we don't want to have like a two-class or a three-class internet, so that some specialized services can like demand money for something and then you get like your data transferred faster even if there is no need for that. So very often, like the big companies whose business models are based on that, like telcos who get money from the streaming providers, for example, for prioritizing their data, try to get money out of that. And that's not fair because actually there's no need for that because the capacity you have like in the internet cables is not too small. And so there is no need to pay for like faster transmission of streaming data or something like this.
Yes, it's not too small yet maybe because things are always getting heavier and more.
Yeah, but nobody can show a need for that, so there's no base of information for that.
Mm-hmm. Your meeting has started yesterday and normally ends tomorrow night, but there are still some things programmed for Monday then.
Yep, Monday is like the day where we traditionally go to the parliament to meet with members of the parliament to talk to them about topics we worked on here. So we try to prepare the meetings and try to see what we want to talk with them about. So the meetings kind of like different kinds of directions. So there are meetings with parliamentarians who are kind of on our side, like really data protection friendly parliamentarians. And for them it's a point like, yeah, we want to exchange like experiences and what is going on right now. And then there are meetings with parliamentarians who are not so sure how to decide. And we try just to give them information and to explain them how it is from like our point of view, how the issues are and where the problems are to raise the awareness.
And you have done that in former years also, so have you seen results from those talks?
We have like quite positive experience with that because like often if you go to parliamentarians who are kind of open to discussion, then it's nice to explain those things because you have to see like parliamentarians have to deal with a lot of different topics. So they have maybe one parliamentarian has to do with fishing and data protection and some environmental issues also. And so they don't have the capacity to dig that deep into those problems like we have because we do it all day. And so they're really thankful for giving them argument they can bring like in the parliament because normally like only the big lobbyists come to them and give them nicely formatted, beautiful, colorful presentations and arguments. And so they need something from the other side too to have something to argue, some base to argue on.
Okay. Now, there are some things that people can maybe still join, I suppose, if they hear this and are very enthusiastic and want to come to Mundo B in Brussels. So are there still elements of the program open for the general public, or should people have subscribed before?
No, we always, it's really important for us that from the beginning on we say there is no need for registration because we don't want this need for registration. That's one of our political statements. And then it's always free and it's always open for everyone. So everyone can come and join and look in the internet under freedomnotfear.org. And there you see a link to the wiki where the schedule is.
And especially there's a party tonight.
There will be a party tonight in London Calling. And of course people are also happily invited to join there.
There was one thing I wanted to ask you about the beginning of the meeting. There was a keynote by a guy whose name I'm not going to try to pronounce. It sounded Slavian, Polish or Russian? Who is this guy?
Yeah, it's Polish. Like, he's the assistant data protection supervisor of the EU, like Wojciech. And he talked about like the new data protection regulation and he went a bit like on the historical level, what's the problem when you want to give a data protection legislation to the EU and where are the pros and cons of this.
So has he been a regular guest on your meetings?
No, he hasn't been a regular guest. We invited him and he accepted the invitation, which was very nice. But the former European Data Protection Supervisor, Peter Hastings, also has been on one of our meetings, I think, 2 years before. So I think there is quite a good connection.
Do you also invite people from companies?
No, usually not. For sure we won't like close the door when someone from a company comes and wants to join the meeting, but we don't invite people from companies for keynotes.
Mm-hmm. Is there a link between your event and the Big Brother Award that took place in Brussels Thursday night?
I just know that like a lot of people of us were at the Big Brother Awards. I personally just arrived in Brussels yesterday. The Belgian League for Human Rights also has some people here, which are coming since several years, but there is no direct link between this award event and our event. It's just like a lucky coincidence.
Because when I googled Freedom Not Fear, then I found that the very first start of it in Berlin, I think in 2006, was linked to the same group that did the Big Brother Awards. So I thought the two were kind of parallel events taking place every year. But there's no connection.
Okay, but I think like the Big Brother Awards in Belgium are organized by someone else than those in Germany. Maybe there's a difference. But of course the NGOs are, since long years, like the same NGOs, there are always new NGOs joining, but there's like a kind of fixed network. But the event wasn't planned together with our event, so that was independent.
Okay, I've asked all my questions. Is there anything you would like to add personally?
No, just if people want to come, they are really invited to join. We are at Mundo B. It's a nice place. And we will be here until tomorrow evening.
Okay, thank you for your time. Bye.
Bye.